This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Great Scott!
I got a bad feeling about this.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Yes, sir!
This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Han Solo, I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
Can't wait.
This is the Bart and Han Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It's 11 o'clock in the greatest city in the world. It's Alan Han. Bart's got off today. We gave him a break. No hot takes today from Bart. 800-919-3776 is the number. So that means you get a Han Solo today. 2 hours of a full buffet and get the calls in early on this. We got a couple of guests today. We do have Butch Goring going to join us. Bottom of the hour to talk some Islanders. That's a huge game tonight as they try to stay in the fight. And you know, something John Cooper said. That I feel like, not that you need any more motivation, but unless you know you really weren't sure if you could get the energy up, Cooper said something after game five that I would put all over the whiteboard in that locker room.
Really?
You can see it. Yeah, yeah. So you'll hear that. Damian Woody's going to join us in the noon hour. We'll talk some NFL with him, and we'll get more on the topic we're about to hit in a minute on the Jets. And about the something about the Big Ten also that he jumped all over on social media. And you know he's a big Islanders fan, so we'll go there with him as well. But a busy day in sports, and we'll get back to where last night you had just a couple of baseball games. The locals both won, Mets and the Yankees. But now you'll get back to more action tonight. Again, Mets and Yankees both playing tonight, both finishing their series. The Yankees finishing their series with Toronto. That's at 7 o'clock. Mets and the Phils. Mets finally get a win last night. Yankees just continue to just blow up with their offense. I mean, an incredible what they've done. 33 runs and 13 home runs in two games against the Blue Jays. You know, they got sick during against Toronto. They got sick. You know, I mean, it was like the worst of the worst, rock bottom up in Buffalo. Well, now they're getting healthy again against that same Toronto team. And so, you know, that's important. That's something that you needed to see. But still, there's a lot more that you need to see from this team before you really start buying back in as they do get healthy. Now, can they stay healthy? Still, seven straight wins, though. We'll get into more Yankees a little bit later on. Basketball-wise, we're back as well with the Eastern Conference Final. Game two, Heat and the Celtics. What a great ending to that game as the Heat take game one in over. Time. That's tonight, 7 o'clock on ESPN. And as I mentioned, Islanders Lightning, 8 o'clock, Eastern Conference Finals, a game six. Can they force a game seven where then there's equal pressure? Because right now there's still pressure on the Islanders to stay alive. They've got to win two, while the Bolts basically just have to win one. So again, plenty to get to today. Your calls, 800-919-3776. But in my 20 years as a sports writer, and all the different teams I covered, there's been times where you've had to ask a GM or the owner even for, I guess you're not looking for the vote of confidence. What you're looking for is that person to explain, how are you feeling right now about the job that this guy's doing? Whether it's an owner talking about his head, I mean, his GM. Maybe it's a GM talking about the head coach he hired. And every time you do it, when you ask the questions, you're asking those questions because you know publicly they can't completely destroy the person they hired. They have to give you a positive quote, a vote of confidence quote, we still believe in him, all that stuff. Every now and then you'll get that subliminal message that's sent where it gets everybody's interest, like, oh, okay, not necessarily all in, are you? You know, like, got to show me something. There's a lot of that stuff that does come out. But for the most part, when you're talking to an owner about the head coach that he hired, basically, because as you know with the Jets, and that's of course who we're talking about, they have GM and head coach are both working together, not for each other. So the GM didn't hire the coach. In fact, as we know, Joe Douglas came in after Adam Gase. They both report to the owner. That's how Woody Johnson's always wanted it, and Christopher Johnson continues that now as he's running the team. That's just how it works with the Jets. I asked Woody once a couple of years ago when he was on our show a while back, and I asked him, like, why do you think this works? And he just feels like it's more of a collaborative, and he just likes the way it works. And it hasn't really worked great because you've had so many issues. But now at least you have, you believe you have synergy with Joe Douglas and with Adam Gase. They've known each other a long time. They seem to get along. They know, they understand. Joe Douglas understands what Adam Gase needs and wants and is willing to work with him to get that. But when Christopher Johnson is asked about Adam Gase, you have to understand. Christopher Johnson's the guy that chose Adam Gase. So if Christopher Johnson came out yesterday after week one and said, you know, I didn't like what I saw. You know, I'm not sure. He has to prove to me that he knows what he's doing. Who does that reflect on? It reflects on him. It reflects on Christopher Johnson. So to have any, to be surprised that Christopher Johnson would not only give a strong vote of confidence for his head coach, that everybody else is looking at with a side eye, thinking to themselves, I'm not sure you know what you're doing. Like, I don't, you really got to prove to me you know what you're doing. He can't do that because now everybody then looks at Christopher Johnson and says, boy, Woody's gone and you've done messed up this team. You hired the wrong guy and it falls on you. Remember what Christopher Johnson said? He wants to win a Super Bowl. He wants to win before Woody gets back so he could prove that he was the better owner. There's a rivalry there. Don't doubt it for a minute. So you can't tell me that Christopher Johnson wasn't watching week one with a lot of concern about his decision. That deep down he's thinking to himself, did I hire the right guy? He'll never admit it publicly, but privately, there's no doubt in my mind that he asked himself, did I hire the right guy? But when reporters ask him, of course, his answer is going to be a lot different than what he says to himself in his own private thoughts. And so, as you know, that's been reported widely now, but we'll discuss. Christopher Johnson told reporters when asked about Adam Gase, he said, quote, I have full confidence in Adam. I've seen him interact with his team. I've seen him lead this team. Look back to last year. He took a team that did so poorly in the first half of the season and held them together. They finished well. I think he has a lot more in him as a head coach than some of our fans are giving him credit for. I understand. They want to see success. I think they will. He also added, I think he can work with and develop quarterbacks. I do continue to think that he's a brilliant offensive mind, especially. He has my every confidence. Brilliant. Genius. So basically what Christopher Johnson saying here is the guy's a genius. He's working with imbeciles. I mean, that's just, what else is he saying there? That you absolutely positively have to understand that he has to back his coach. It's week one. Like, it's too soon. It's week one in year two. It's too soon. It's way too soon for the owner to start sounding alarm bells. But if you believed what you saw in week one, there's a reason for those alarm bells. And now while he said, look at last season, he kept that group together. A lot of credit should go to Greg Williams. The defense is what helped them through the finish of that season. Sam Darnold finally got himself healthy. And by the latter half, and also the ghost thing, but by the latter half of the season, seemed at times to find a rhythm, although I still, at the end of that season, said to myself, there's a lot more I need to see out of Sam. And I was one of the biggest believers of Sam Darnold coming out of the draft. I never thought the Jets would have a chance to draft this guy, and they did. And they got him. So that's great. But now they got to develop him. And they chose to go with somebody that did not have a great experience in Miami. And in fact, the track record, which everybody wants to point to Peyton Manning, but look what happened with Peyton Manning, and look what he did with Jay Cutler. And then you say to yourself, those are guys that were in the league a long time. Those are vets. Sam has talent, but he's a kid. Like, he needs somebody that can develop him, not hand him a gigantic playbook and wait for the kid to come to you and say, hey, we need to pare this thing down a little bit. Right, this is way too much for me to like comprehend and understand and figure out during a game when I got people coming at me trying to kill me because our offensive line still isn't that good. So he goes to him and does that. And he's like, oh, I was waiting for him to do that. Really? Great. This is what we're going to do. So this is literally throw the baby into the lake and go and just say, swim. He'll figure it out. I don't know if that works in the NFL. It doesn't seem to be working. That's my biggest concern. But if you want to say, again, his experience with Peyton Manning, with Jay Cutler, like, look what they did. There's other examples now you could throw on the other side of that. And I'll tell you what. I thought I could put something together and tell you. But why don't we have Greeny tell you? He's a big Jets fan as well. And this was him this morning on Get Up. Take a listen.
So the acting owner of the Jets thinks Adam Gase has a brilliant offensive mind. To that, I reply, what on earth could possibly have given you that impression? There is certainly no evidence that it's true. What there is, in fact, is overwhelming evidence that the exact opposite is true. Consider that in no season that Peyton Manning was not his quarterback did any of Gase's teams ever finish in the top half of the league in scoring. The last three seasons, in fact, they finished 28th, 26th, and 31st. That's in a 32-team league. In 17 games under Gase, the Jets have scored 33 touchdowns, and they've punted 93 times. They have scored on 24% of their possessions. That's the worst in the league. They've gone three and out on 44%. That's the worst in the league. Their average drive has gained 23 yards. All of those are the worst in the NFL. But wait, there's more. When the Jets acquired Le'Veon Bell, he had averaged more total yards per game than any player in history ever. Under the brilliant offensive mind, Bell is 27th in the league in yards per game. And there's one more, just so you know, this is not just my fandom talking. Under Gase in Miami, Ryan Tannehill was so bad, the Dolphins traded him for mid-round draft picks, and they chipped in $5 million just to get rid of him. Then, in his first year in Tennessee away from Gase, Tannehill had the fourth highest passer rating in history and led the Titans to the AFC title game. Those are all facts. They happened. And they beg one big question, Christopher Johnson. If the coach has a brilliant offensive mind, what in the world is he doing with it?
And that's why I said what I said. And by the way, Green, you can hear right here on our station from 1 to 2, 98.7 ESPN. But that was from Get Up this morning. And it's everything that you need to say in response. I mean, that is absolutely your counter-argument. Is you have Sam Darnold, and he's 22, and he's a kid. And you hand him a playbook, and you basically are throwing him in the lake and saying, swim. He'll figure it out. And if he drowns, oh well. Not my fault. He needs to be better. Because that's what I heard after week one. What I heard after week one was on that interception where Sam is in panic mode, jumps and just throws one right in the middle of the field, and it gets picked. And what does Adam say after the game? Well, that's not the play we were looking for there. Throw the kid under the bus. You want to take him privately and discuss it, that's fine. But you're essentially saying it's everyone else's fault. There's not a single play that I would look back on and change. Right? Why watch the game back? Every call was the right call. Was it? Because you got your ass kicked. And you can say all you want about how good the Bills' defense is, and it is a good defense. There's no question about it. But if you know that defense is good, I'm sorry. Everybody has a weakness. Everybody. And a good head coach finds that weakness and exploits it. This, we got to clean some things up and get better crap. I'm done with that halfway through last season. Cleaning things up is not something you should be doing in week one of a game that you've been preparing for a month because you didn't have any preseason games. There was one team for you to prepare for. One. And it was the Bills. And you knew everything about them, or at least should have. Your quarterback was not prepared. That's on you. That is not on the quarterback. It's on you. It all falls on the coach. All of it. Now, yes, he did take some responsibility from it. He did. And he has to. But Christopher Johnson saying that he is essentially a genius, that he's a brilliant mind. He could be a brilliant mind. That's fine. But he's not a leader of men. That's the issue. And a leader of men is about developing players too. It's not just about telling players where to go. It's not just about running a practice where everybody's disciplined and prepared and not taking penalties. Because, oh, by the way, that's part of coaching too. I don't need to hear about his brilliant mind. I've heard enough about how brilliant he is as a head coach. I'm sorry, as an offensive coordinator. What I haven't heard yet is how he takes mistakes from a quarterback and makes them better. How he takes that brilliant mind and shares it with the quarterback to the point where the quarterback now plays with the confidence and the trust and the belief in the system that he's playing. I've seen none of that in Sam Darnold. That, to me, is my biggest concern. Because if I'm Christopher Johnson, I need to have more support for Sam Darnold. Why? As I've said many times, I said this about Porzingis too. To get a pick that high in the draft means you had to suffer a lot of losses, that you had to go through a lot of pain, that your product took a hit, trended down, that your fan base was demoralized by losing. So that draft pick means a lot. That draft pick is the golden child that is supposed to help you never, ever have to have a high draft pick again. That's what he's supposed to be. He's more valuable to you than your head coach. Because it's not like this was, you didn't take a guess at Sam Darnold. You were gifted Sam Darnold. That was a gift. The Giants took a running back in a quarterback draft. They gifted you this player. This player should be the one that you are talking about as he's the most important thing for us right now because he can lead us to greatness. And I've got to make sure that the head coach is the right guy for him, not the other way around. Because the narrative coming out of week one from some people was questioning whether Sam Darnold's good enough. How dare you? He's in his third season. He's on his second coach. And you wonder if the second coach knows what the hell he's doing. Don't fail Sam Darnold like the Knicks failed Kristaps Porzingis. Don't dare do that. And that's what the Jets are doing right now. 800-919-3776 is the number. Let's get a couple of calls in here. Let's go with Kim in the car to start us off. Kim.
Hey, Alan. How you doing?
Good.
My problem with Adam Gase is this. It's the same song from Miami. He doesn't hold himself accountable. It's everyone's fault. Why didn't do this? Why didn't do that? And it's never his fault. As a Jets fan, it's enough. It's time for him to go. It's time for them to at least promote Greg Williams to the interim position because he holds people accountable. If you're not playing up to par, he's getting you out of that game. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, the only other issue is now Dowell Loggins got to go because he's the sort of the quarterback's coach, offense coordinator. You got to bring in somebody to run your offense. Exactly. You bring in somebody, and that's a whole other system now. And now it's once in the middle of a season. Like, that's the problem. I think you're stuck here. You're not firing Adam Gase during the season. So he still has the whole year to prove himself, but I worry about the impact it's going to have if this is the best work. Like, Sam is the one that looks confused. He's the one that looks nervous. He's the one that doesn't trust what's happening in front of him with his offensive line, his improved offensive line. There's got to be some type of confidence I see out of that quarterback, and he doesn't have any. And I blame coaching for that.
You're right. And also with the fact so far for the last 2 years, all we've been hearing from Adam Gase before, the season starts is, Sam is looking good. He's doing this. He's improving.
You're going to get that propaganda all the time because we don't. Here's the thing, Kim, and I appreciate the call. I want to get to a few others. That is the problem also without watching preseason games. You're trusting what the coach is telling you. I remember Rich Samidi watching a scrimmage tweeting about how the offense looks terrible. Like he literally said it. It looks bad. And I didn't know the Jet defense was that good. Matt in Staten Island, Matt.
Hey, Alan. Basically, you and Greeny and every Jets fan have said it already a million times, but what makes this worse is not a single Jets fan wanted this guy to begin with. But I had two questions.
It's called lost time, and that's why Christopher Johnson has to say what he said about Adam Gase, because if he doesn't, Christopher Johnson's admitting the first major decision I made as owner, I screwed up, and I cost this franchise time, and I might have cost them a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, and I believe the Dolphins organization's laughing at us. But I've got two questions. Yeah. I don't understand one thing is how everyone was like, Rashad Perryman is like a cheaper Robbie Anderson. But if we're trying to, get Sam Darnold to be the best he could be, why not give him a guy he knows? And then secondly, coach. Who are the next coaching candidates for this job? What do you think?
Everybody is looking at Eric Bieniemy. I mean, you know, obviously with his background there and that offense that he's working with, I mean, you could say that Andy Reid's running everything. Doesn't matter. Bieniemy is part of the decision-making and he's part of the planning. So even just through osmosis, you would think that it should make him pretty smart. So it just that's the name that just would keep coming back now because, you know, going experience like a Mike McCarthy would have been, I guess, the easiest way to go. But Mike McCarthy wanted a lot of say. And at the time, you weren't going to get that. But that would have been the obvious way to go here, at least looking at it right now. But it's always easy to go do that in hindsight. Let me take Angelo in Bayville real quick. Angelo.
Yeah, hi, guys. So listen, I'm just going to just come out right away. I'm a Giants fan, but I have nothing. It's nothing against anything with the Jets. However, all I've been hearing for the past couple weeks is it's Adam Gase and nothing is ever Sam's fault. How is he always, you know, has all the excuses in the world? He has no responsibility for his play?
Of course he does, but it starts with where he's being guided by this coach. I mean, this coach was hired specifically for him. You understand?
Right, okay.
So to me, the mistakes are going to be mistakes that he makes. You know, decision-making mistakes in the middle of a game is one thing. But when he looks confused, when he looks nervous, when he misses things that should be obvious enough, that is also part of coaching. That is preparing your player. And you also have to understand, he's treating him like he's a 15-year veteran at times. You can't do that with a young player. You can't. His best experience has been with experienced players. But when he had a young quarterback like Ryan Tannehill, and as he has here, he has not done well.
All right, but at the same time, you have other guys that are out there outperforming. And I know the Jets, when everybody uses the talent and the coaching, but you got guys
They've got enough talent.
Minshew.
They've got enough talent this year.
Like Gardner Minshew looks great, and we thought the Jaguars are trash. You know, Daniel Jones, I mean, he was supposed to be a bum, and he looks pretty good compared to where Sam is, and he's in here sweet.
I tell you, Angelo, who said that Daniel Jones was supposed to be a bum? People who never saw Daniel Jones play.
Right.
Anybody that saw him play, if you remember after the draft, there were people who were draft experts who said this is a good player. Like people just didn't know who he was. I don't fall into that category either. But I'll be honest with you. Go ahead.
Okay. I was gonna say, but going back to a couple of days when you were saying all the stuff about with Giant fans and Jet fans, I don't think it's Giant fans look at the Jets in general, but I think maybe it's more that the comfort of the quarterback situation is what it is.
Oh yeah,
because they got laughed at a lot.
Let me explain that. Yeah, let me explain that, Angel. Let me explain the other day. What we were doing was based on what we were hearing on our own network, and we were basically just trying to have some fun and stoke the fire. Because it does happen a little too much. And I got to run. Thank you, Angel, for calling. It's basically there were some people that are Giants fans at the station and elsewhere that we heard that were basically like, it's just like saying, at least we're not the Jets.
Chew it and do it.
It's like basically that's your line now. Like that's your standard now. At least we're not the Jets.
Think about what you're saying.
It's come on, guys. Like come on, guys. That's the best you can do. Let's not talk about us because we have nothing to talk about. So instead, we'll say we're not as bad as you are. Well, that's great. You still suck too. 800-919-3776 is the number for the call. So as we wait for Butch, let's get back to a little bit of the Jets calls we were getting here. Let's go to Dre in Hackensack. Dre.
How you doing, Al?
All right.
All right, buddy. So I got to pick a little bone with you, buddy, because truth is the fans, the Jets fans like myself, long-time diehard Jets fans, we're not idiots. So it's with excruciating pain, I have to let you know that not only do we have the worst coach in the league, but our quarterback is just as responsible as the coach. And I want to elaborate on that because I want to tell you something. The guy on the other side of the field, Josh Allen, is better than Sam Darnold. We have backup quarterbacks in the National Football League that are better than Sam Darnold. Although Adam Gase is terrible, I cannot let you put it all on Adam Gase and say that
I'm gonna. Dre, I'll tell you, and I'll tell you when. I got to run because Butchie's here, but I appreciate the call. Thanks, Dre. But here's what I'm going to say quickly: is that some of the experts who've been following the sport for a very long time, after last season, project Sam to have the best out of his quarterback group, have a terrific career. All right, I mean. The people that know what they're seeing, see this guy's got potential and talent. It's got to be developed, and it's not being developed properly right now. That's what it looks like. We'll see what it looks like this weekend. You never know. Things can change. And then we can start saying, all right, maybe week one was just a bad first week. That's all. Meanwhile, game five for the Islanders was a fantastic ending. And it was, now it sets up for a game six that we hope will lead to a game seven. Butch Goring joins us right now. He, of course, on the coverage with MSG Networks, and they'll have pregame coverage 1 hour, 1 hour prior to the start of game six tonight, 7 o'clock, both MSG and MSG Plus, and then a postgame show immediately following the conclusion of the game, whenever that will be. And we hope it isn't two or three or any more overtimes. But if it ends in a W, that's really all that matters right now. Hey, Butchie, before we start talking about this game, I want to play for you something that John Cooper said after game five, and I want to get your take on it. So take a listen.
Sure.
They're probably bound to win one, and we're probably bound to lose one. And it took the stars aligning on a fan shot for them to get the break they got. So that's what happens in this game. And, you know, we had opportunities to put the game away, and either, you know, it was a bounce here or a save here or a block shot here. But, like, if you look at the whole game as a whole, if we, you know, keep doing that, and pretty confident, you know, in our group.
Now, you've been a head coach as well as a player. When he says, when you're on the side of the Islanders and you work as hard as you did to stay alive and get that win, and the opposing coach said the stars had to align for you to basically get that break that you got. You don't need any more motivation to stay alive and win a game six, but I know I'd be writing out on a whiteboard right now.
Yeah, certainly you don't, you know, those are the things that when you hear, you know, you talk about in the room or someone puts it up and hey, listen, John Cooper is a very, very good coach. And you know, and he knows these things are going to get out, and he's probably thinking his players are going to hear this too. And certainly, so you don't want to give the Islanders really any, I wouldn't give the opposition any credit either. I mean, I want my team to be on a positive note and feel like we were the better team that game. We should have won. But in the same breath, Alan, if we look at this whole series, I mean, okay, the National Hockey League or whoever it was made that decision, gave the Tampa team game one. That was a gift. Here you go. And yeah. I don't think anybody could argue that point. Barry has said it. John Cooper has said it. So, okay, so now it's the best of six, and now the Tampa team has to only win three. But the other side is that, you know, the Islanders played really well in game two and really well in game three. So, you know, I'm thinking fair is fair. There, Tampa might have found themselves in a real hole early on. So, but as a coach, you know, you got to say the right things for your team because that's really all that matters, and you don't care about the opposition.
Well, I know what I do care about, though, and I care about a power play when you get those opportunities that you get. And power plays aren't supposed to make you angry as a fan, but the more I watch, the angrier I get. What's going on with that power play, and what could they change with it? Because you're going to get opportunities, and against this team, you've got to capitalize on them, and they have not done that on the power play.
No, it's been very disappointing, and I like the word, use the word frustrating, because as a coach, as a former coach, and now as a spectator, it frustrates the heck out of me. And most importantly, Alan, I am just so frustrated with the entry of the.
Yes.
Once they get it
slingshot.
In, they move it around pretty good, and they get some shots at the net. And there are some things that, as a former coach, I might do a little bit differently. But the entry just drives me nuts. And I guess my only criticism of the power play, from that standpoint, is they try to do the same thing. Power play after power play with no variety. I mean, it's for the most part, it's hit the late guy and everybody's lined up and try and get it in there. And the one person who has success in puck retrieval on the power play is Anthony Beauvillier, and he just comes up fast and then he chips and chases.
Mm-hmm.
And then more often than not, the Isles get the puck and then they start moving it around. And then, you know, they try to do whatever they're trying to do out there. I mean, I think you need to shoot a lot more. I think there's a little hesitation there to shoot, and I think they're too methodical at times for me. I mean, it's as I like to say, it's not a chess game. You know, if you're not in the open, then you've got to move to the open. You don't just stand in one place and say, okay, here it is. We practice it this way, and now give me the puck. It doesn't work that way. You know, good penalty killers take away the lanes. I mean, they recognize the lanes, and if you watch other power plays. particularly Tampa's, they're moving 5-6 feet in different directions all the time, and that makes it hard for a penalty killer because you can't always see them moving because they're sometimes behind you. So those are a couple of things, but you know, we can only hope that you know, they have a big night on the power play or score a timely goal at least and give themselves a lead or give themselves a win.
There's times, Butchie, that it feels like, or at least looks like, the Lightning are just better than the Islanders, and the Islanders are working extra hard just to keep pace, to stay. And I know it's a 1-1 game, but it there's a sense that the Lightning almost in game five sort of went prevent defense. You know, didn't really, like, there weren't a lot of shots. The Islanders certainly didn't get a lot of shots off in that game. But it almost looked like they were just trying to play that game of attrition and figure we have enough talent to get the goal we need to. It just didn't happen for them. But I mean, are you seeing it like that? Like to win game six for the Islanders would be, to force a game seven would be an incredible upset. Or do you see it as, no, these are pretty evenly matched teams that both are missing. Braden Point obviously out. Stamkos has been out for the whole series. The Islanders missing Cizikas, which is a huge loss for them. Do you see it as it's not as lopsided as it has looked at times in this series?
I think, Alan, that there are, and I would agree with you, I think there are times that the Tampa really can dominate. They pass the puck. I'm really impressed with the way they move the puck, and they get up the ice in a hurry, and it seems like it takes a while for the Islanders to kind of figure out what the heck's going on, like there's this whirlwind coming at them. But the thing about the Islanders is that, you know, with good goaltending, which is what they've had, they just don't go away. They just keep coming at you. They're coming at you, and true to the sport is eventually Tampa makes a mistake. And you can call it whatever you want, whether it was the stars or a line. I mean, Shattenkirk made a mistake. I mean, Anders Lee was right in front of him, and the smart play would have been to chip it back into the corner and say, I'll wait for a better opportunity. But he thought offense, and he went to shoot it, and he fanned on it. And then he didn't have enough common sense to right away block out Lee. He didn't take him at all. I mean, Lee had to chip it by him, and
right.
Shattenkirk did nothing, and too bad. That's that's a mistake. So I just feel like the Islanders played a certain style. They make it difficult for them to get scored upon, and, you know, Tampa, as much skill as they have, you know, they the only game they really blew them out was the game one a minor league team would have done the exact same thing because the Owls had absolutely no. I mean, they did. They had
no. You're right. You could tell. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could tell. You could tell they weren't there.
Game seven and traveled and
right.
And you know, the mental part of the game and the physical part of the game. So that beat out as it may. So to answer your question is the Islanders at times struggle against them. No doubt about it. But the way they play, and we've always said this as former players, is, let's keep it within a goal because you never know when we're going to score a goal, and then you don't know what happens. And that's pretty much what the Islanders do most of the time, is that they just don't go away, and that can be frustrating for the opposition.
All right, we're talking with Butch Goring, a four-time Stanley Cup champion, also a Stanley Cup Finals MVP as well in that run with the Islanders back in the 80s. And I love the story. And you know this too. You've heard this many, many times. You're one of the trivia answers when people say, you know, what is one of the greatest trades ever made that turned a team into a champion? I mean, your trade is one of those final piece type of trades. But when you got there, the story you always tell, and I want you to tell people who are listening today, when you get to the Islanders, who were a team that got upset in 78, 79, another upset, couldn't make it. You're winning the President's Trophy, can't get through. But yet, they didn't know how good they were. And you went in that locker room and you come from a good Kings team. You were a really good player already. You walk in that locker room and just what you told those players, you know, retell that story. Cause I think it's significant for this Islanders team.
Well, I hadn't settled in there all that long, and I'm usually not, you know, I'm usually quiet in some areas, although not always, as you well know. But I think, I can't remember, honestly, I don't know if it was after the game or in between periods or whatever, but we were getting beat, we weren't playing well, and I just had the sense that, you know, these guys just lacked some confidence, you know, that they obviously they knew that they were a good team, but I don't think they knew what the league thought of them, you know, because then no one's going to go around saying, hey, you guys are great, you should win, you know, and then give them that edge. So I don't think they felt that or knew that. And really that's all I said was that, you know, basically, is you guys have no idea, you know, A, how good you are, and B, what people are saying about you. I mean, I remember being in L.A. when they were struggling that year, and a matter of fact, I was talking to Bobby Clark in Philadelphia, and because they had won the President's Cup the year before, and they were just about 500, a little bit about 500.
Yeah.
And I remember asking Bobby, because he was out east, obviously, and I said, what's going on with the Islanders? I mean, they're way better than that. What's happening? And he went, I don't know, but I like it. So, you know, so that was really the message, was that to try and get these guys to, you know, that they shouldn't worry so much, and they should play like eventually what we did end up doing is knowing that after we won the first cup, Alan, is that we knew if we played our best, no one was going to beat us. We knew that. There was nobody going to upset us. If anybody beat us, it's because we didn't put our best foot forward. And that changed dramatically for us in the second, the third, and even the fourth year. And that wasn't being arrogant or cocky. It was just fact.
Yeah, it was just it's the belief that, but sometimes it need that from the outside. And the reason why I asked you about that is because whatever happens tonight with this Islanders group is, do you feel like, I always say this, and I had a GM tell me this once, that when your team's in the championship round, so final four, basically any sport, that's a good year. A great year is winning the championship, but getting to the final four, that's a really good year. So can this group build from this and make sure this isn't one of those flash in the pan like 93 ended up being? I know they broke that team up, but still, is this something that you feel is a step, and maybe they'll add a player who'll come in and say, hey guys, you know what, you like kind of put the league on notice with that run you had last year?
Yeah, I would agree with you, Alan, and it really goes back to when Tavares decided to go to Toronto. All the players did not like what they were hearing and reading with the departure of Tavares, that this team was lousy. This team had no chance. There was no talent here. And that might have been the biggest kick in the butt that organization could have received, because from that point on, it changed mentally for all the players, because I've talked to them about it, particularly a year ago. And with Lou Lamoriello coming in and then Barry Trotz coming in, everything changed for these guys, and they became believers that they're a good team last year. They didn't know how good they could be. They just knew that they were a good team and they could compete. They beat Pittsburgh four straight. They turned it around defensively. So they knew they were a good team, and they felt good about it. And then with this year here, especially starting with that unbeaten streak of 17 games, I think they were starting to believe that, you know, maybe we're a little better than people think we are, and maybe we're a little better than we think we are. Yes, they did slump, and they went into, you know, a tailspin, and they lost some key players. And for me, that just says, you know, they're not quite as deep as maybe they need to be, losing Pelech and losing Cizikas and Cutter at different times. But I got to believe that, you know, getting to where they are now and competing as hard as they have, and really, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, they just flew through Florida. They flew through the Capitals. They did the same thing with the Flyers. I mean, the Flyers, it was a great series. It went seven, but that series could have been over in four or five.
Oh,
and they
easy.
Outplayed them for so many games. So I have to believe that they feel really good about themselves. I think Lou Lamoriello is feeling good, and he probably thinking, okay, where can I strengthen this team and get just a little bit closer? Because you're right. I think that you can look at this series and say, yeah, Tampa's got some skill there. And it's on display every once in a while. So, yeah, there's maybe room for improvement. But I got to feel that this team is feels really good about itself, feels good about its coaching staff, and certainly they have played, unbelievable hockey.
Yeah, whatever happens tonight, even if it ends tonight, I feel like hopefully, at least you hope, it's only the beginning. Butchie, thanks so much for the time. Enjoy the game tonight, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Al. Appreciate it.
It's time for the Baseball Report, brought to you by Mazda. So the Yankees get a 13-2 win over the Blue Jays. Seven home runs hit in this game, three of them by Higgy.
See ya! Goodbye, sir!
I mean, you just keep going with them. So seven home runs. So the first time in franchise history, six or more home runs in consecutive games, back-to-back, in a belly-to-belly. So 13 home runs in two games, 33 runs, feeling good about life now with seven straight wins. So as I mentioned earlier, they got sick versus Toronto. Now they're getting healthy against Toronto. Can I mention, do I dare say three games back at Tampa for the division lead? Is that going too far? See, what matters more is this.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
I think so.
Yeah!
Luke Voit gets his 19th, so he's leading the majors. DJ LeMahieu with the lead off again. Like, just fantastic. They're just opening up that lead now. So what's more interesting, guys, is that right now you're setting up for a wild card series with, Minnesota. Who's your daddy? So it doesn't matter. 4 or 5, you'd rather have it at the stadium, but still. All right, that's the Mazda Report brought to you by... that's the Baseball Report brought to you by Mazda, or the Mazda Report brought to you by Baseball. Discover the family of award-winning Mazda CUVs, including the first-ever Mazda CX-30, the versatile Mazda CX-5, and the three-row CX-9, all engineered to deliver confidence on the road ahead. Visit MazdaUSA.com or see your local Mazda dealer for more details.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.